Broadcasting live and direct from the basement studios on the Stanford University campus, this is KZSU Stanford.
six in the butt, 20 in the waist, 44 on the hips, your hair was real crazy. You upset me. Yes, you upset me. I feel like I've been hit by a falling tree. I cried, woman, what'd you do to me? Not too tall, complexion is fair. Man, she knocked me out the way she wears her hair. You upset me. Yes, you upset me. I feel like I've been hit by a falling tree. Cried, woman, what'd you do to me? Wrote my baby a letter, sent a telegram, called the long distance one, know just what was I in. You upset me. Woo! Yes, you upset me. I feel like I've been hit by, I cried, woman, what'd you do to me? From town to town, seems like everybody wants to throw me down, 'cause I'm a poor man, but I'm a good man, understand. Went down to the railroad station. I looked up on the wall, but my money wasn't like babe. I couldn't go anywhere at all, 'cause I'm a poor man, but I'm a good man, understand. We'll be right back.
carry. So heavy, can't you see? Just wish there was someone, this whole wide world, who'd wanna help for me. Well, I'd be all right, baby. Just give me a break, 'cause good things come to those who wait. I've been a good man, I'm a poor man, understand. Just to those who wait, I've been a good man, but I'm a poor man, understand.
Welcome to a very special edition of Blues with a Feeling here on KZSU this morning. And the young man that was just singing there, Mr. Denny Geyer, who lives here in the Bay Area, was performing, and this is back from the 1960s in the band he was in back then called AB Sky. This is a long forgotten stuff that I've been waiting to hear for a long time. As many records as I got, I don't have any AB Sky. There's only two of them. Denny Geyer, welcome to KZSU. How you doing this morning?
Great. Thank you, Bird, for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for taking time. We recently met on the phone through a mutual friend, yeah. Bobby up on Paradise Ridge. And I've heard your name for many years, and we met once before, but your legacy goes all the way back to the 60s and even beyond that in Madison, Wisconsin, and Milwaukee, from which you came here. And where I want to delve into all that today. You were part of AB Sky. That was a band that came out here from Wisconsin back in 68, right?
April of 68. April 17th.
You remember the day?
I remember. We Steve Miller was responsible for bringing us out here because he had come out in 66, and most of his band was from Wisconsin. It was Tim Davis and Curly Cook, you know, and Jim Peterman played organ with, and these guys were all musicians I'd worked with in around Madison when we all went to college together.
Oh, and Steve Miller went to college there too?
Yeah. So they came out in like those guys. Steve called them out in about I think October of 68, and I was in the service. So anyway, I got out of the service in January of 67, and we started to put together this band that evolved into AB Sky. That's when I met Jim Lyban, and so we came out in April of 68. But it was basically Steve and the guys in the band that kept calling from 66 on, saying, you know, you got to come out here, everything's happening.
It was blowing up, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so we finally came out with AB Sky in April of 68, and we auditioned at the Avalon Ballroom like a day or two after we arrived, and the manager there really liked us. His name was Michael Christopher, and he kind of took us under his wing, and we started opening shows for, you know, everybody. Jefferson Airplane, Steve Miller, Muddy Waters.
Wow.
Moby Grape.
The original Avalon Ballroom at Sutter and Van Ness, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
And we started doing all those shows, and one thing led to another. And this all happened in a matter of months. I mean, things were happening fast back then.
Yeah.
And then we got our deal within the first year, in May of 69, we did this album, so that was like 13 months after we arrived in San Francisco. But back then, you know, record companies were signing San Francisco bands left and right because the whole world was looking at San Francisco. You know, the music was just exploding.
Right. Well, you had the two big halls, the Fillmore and the Avalon.
Yeah.
And then a thriving club scene as well, which we're going to talk about for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit. You're originally from Wisconsin, what, Milwaukee?
Yeah, I was born right on the edge of, born and raised in Milwaukee, right on the outskirts. It was kind of rural at that time. Now it's all shopping centers and everything else. But born and raised there, went through school there. And when I go back home, I still go back home try to get back there every summer. I'm in touch with a lot of high school and college friends, and I usually do a gig or two with Jim Lyban and another good friend, Steve Cohen, who we had talked about.
Yeah, another harmonica player.
Yeah, great harmonica player.
Yeah, we've been talking for a few days now, and amazing stories. You came up at the perfect time, too, when Rhythm and Blues was still just out there. You got a chance to see some of the real guys. As a matter of fact, you just mentioned off mic, you saw Sonny Boy Williamson.
Oh, man.
Mr. Rice Miller live in person.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I was in college, I started college at Whitewater, Wisconsin, which was maybe 30, 35 miles from Madison. And I worked through the main agency, Ken Animatti's agency in Madison. That's where Steve Miller and Boz and Curly and Tim, everybody, all the musicians, all the good players worked through his agency. You know, he booked all southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois. And anyway, when I was in college in 62, it was a small farm town, 2,000 people, but there was this grocery store, you know, and they had this bin of, like, throwaway records. And it turned out to be, it was all Kent and Crown records.
Oh, no.
And it was
the B.B. King.
I bought a B.B. King. All these albums were 79 cents. And I bought this B.B. King album for 79 cents, and I had never heard of B.B. King. This was 1962. I was playing with Ace and the Crossfires doing, rockabilly, rock and roll, and having a ball.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got it, and I took it back home. I had a portable Victrola in my room at college, you know, and I played it, and it was, like, different. And the more I listened to it, the more I got it. So I went back, and I bought the other five B.B. King albums for 79 cents.
Sure.
And they also had a John Lee Hooker, a Bobby Bland, Ike Turner.
Oh, my gosh.
And I bought them all for 79 cents.
Do you still have those records?
I've got them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But so the story we were talking about was a year later, there was a packet show. By then, I had discovered WLAC radio out of Nashville.
Nashville, yeah.
And listening to the Hoss Band and John R. and all these guys.
Yeah.
Because we could, it was a 50,000 watt station, and we could pick it up in Whitewater. So at night, I would listen to
oh
all
my
these.
Gosh.
And that's where I discovered, you know, Muddy Waters, Tima Walker, Clifton Chenier, Sonny Boy, everybody. Anyway, there's this packet show in Milwaukee. An old place that's probably gone now called the Southside Armory. And there was a six-piece band. I think the guitar player's name may have been Johnny Brown. I'm not sure. And I think they were from Texas, Houston, Texas.
Texas Johnny Brown. He's still alive.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. He had this, you know, drums, bass, guitar, and three horns. And it was what they called a package show, which they don't do anymore. And
mm-hmm.
his band, the same band, the show was Junior Parker, Freddie King, Sonny Boy Williamson, Joe Hinton, Rufus Thomas, who had the dog was out,
mm-hmm.
and his daughter, a very, very young Carla Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
And so Johnny Brown's band, I hope I have his name right, but it was, they backed up all these great artists, and I could go, you know, I wanted to meet these guys, so I just went backstage, and the dressing room was the kitchen of this old funky old kitchen of the Southside Armory. So there's Junior Parker, Freddie King, Sonny Boy.
And you talked to all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How old were you, Denny?
At that time, I was 20.
My
Denny. And I was just like, I mean, it was just like life-changing. I was just like,
because
I had already become a huge Freddie King and Junior Parker fan. You know, I was learning how to play Hideaway in San Jose and
yeah,
all the Freddie King
right.
standards.
Along with every guitar player in the country.
But I got to tell you, when I met Freddie King, he was such a huge man. I shook his hand, and I remember his fingers seemed to go halfway up my forearm. And I thought, this man is a giant, you know.
He was. He was a massive guy. Him and Howlin' Wolf, right?
Yeah, Wolf was a big man. Yeah.
Denny Geyer's the guest for all 3 hours today, reminiscing, and there's going to be new stuff. We're playing old stuff. I've never even heard the A.B. Sky that we're playing right now. And after a little bit, we're going to get in touch with Denny's old buddy, the harmonica player, legendary Wisconsin harp legend, Jim Liban.
Yeah.
So let's get back into this A.B. Sky. This is was this your first record, the first A.B. Sky record?
Right, yeah.
And you said you guys got signed to Mercury?
MGM Records.
MGM.
Yeah.
Amazing. Took you down to L.A. and cut the record. And
yeah. I have a story about that, how we got the deal, too. It's a good story.
Let's go ahead and play this next track. We think Jim Liban's on here. This is called Just What I Need.
Yeah, a song I wrote. Yeah.
All right. Denny Geyer for the 3 hours right here on KZSU Blues with a Feeling. We'll be right back. And that was more AB Sky featuring Jim Liebman on harmonica, along with my guest today, Denny Geyer, who's still here in the Bay Area after all these years. Did you ever think you'd end up staying this long in the Bay Area?
I remember when we came out, I was married at the time we came out, and my wife said, well, let's give it 3 years. If you can't get something going, we're going to go back to Milwaukee, you know, and I said, okay, but...
How long did she last?
Well, we were together 12 years.
Oh.
But the thing is, I mean, I knew in the back of my mind, she was saying, let's give music 3 years.
Oh.
Because I had finished college, I had a bachelor's in business administration, but I didn't really want anything to do with business. I wanted to play the blues, you know.
So, oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Denny Geyer, here you are, and Jim Liebman, are you on the phone with us right now?
Yeah.
All right. Live from somewhere in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee,
Wisconsin. We have Jim Liebman, who just played the harmonica on that track we just heard. And I wanted to get you two together to reminisce and talk about those old days when you guys knew each other back in Wisconsin and then came out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jim, how did you and Denny Geyer first meet?
Well, I was in a band... back in, it must have been about 66 or so, or 67, somewhere around there. It was the New Blues, and the keyboard player in the band at the time was Jimmy Peterman, and Jim Marcotte was playing bass, and Terry Anderson was playing drums. And they all kept talking about this wonderful guitar player who was in the service, but he was going to be coming back pretty soon, getting out of the service, and that I would just love the way he played and everything else. He was a nice guy, and his name was Denny Geyer. So finally, Denny got out of the service, and he joined the band, and... that's pretty much my recollection of how we first met up. But I was playing with all those guys first. Denny had been the guitar player beforehand, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Denny?
Yeah, I was with the band before I went in the service. I had gotten in the reserve, so I went in the service of August of 66, and I got out in January of 67, and that's when I met Jim and joined the band that was called the New Blues that evolved into
AB Sky.
Yeah.
And reminisce about how you guys decided to come out here. Now, Denny's been talking about Steve Miller called and said, you guys got to get out of here. It's blowing up. What do you remember about it, Jim?
Well, I remember there was a lot of buzz about all the Wisconsin boys that wound up going out with out to San Francisco with Steve Miller. In fact, Jim Peterman got the call, the keyboard player with the New Blues, and Curly Cook got up in Wausau, Wisconsin, got a call, and Tim Davis, the drummer, I think Tim was Tim based out of Janesville or Madison, Denny? I can't remember.
Yeah, Tim lived in Janesville, but
Janesville.
You know, we all at that time we were all working through Ken Animati's agency out of Madison, basically. So,
right,
yeah, but we had all played together before I went in the service.
This is an amazing story. It was a hotbed of music back there, apparently, back in the 60s, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, that's where we all met Steve Miller. Boz Skaggs was back there at that time. Ben Sidran, who's still there, that's his home. Curly Cook, Tim Davis. I showed you that article from 1970.
Mm-hmm.
All the people that came out.
When you guys arrived here, was it culture shock?
Oh, for me it was, yeah.
And it still is for me.
Now, Jim, you stayed for a while, but you ended up going back to Milwaukee and staying there for up until now, right?
Well, yeah, I did live a couple different... Well, I lived in Nashville for a little while, too, but primarily I've been here for for the duration. Yeah.
What do you remember about back in the days when AB Sky was out here and you guys were on that whirlwind?
Well, as they like to say, if you remember much of the 60s, you know,
you didn't do it there.
You didn't have a good time.
Right. All kidding aside, it was culture shock for me too. It was just absolutely, you know, just bananas. I mean, all the rules and the I guess the social constrictions that I had grown up with were out the window, and so to speak, and everything was fair game, everything and anything, and it was actually overwhelming for, you know, as a young white suburban kid from Milwaukee, it was pretty overwhelming, and but that being said, it was incredibly interesting. It was probably one of the more interesting times of my life in that short year that I was out there, because, you know, just for the reasons that I mentioned, it was just, you know, like living on another planet, you know.
Did it change you in any kind of a way? When you got back, were you a different person?
Yes, I was.
You were?
To the degree that, you know, a 20-year-old can be a different person, you know what I mean? I really, it did open up my eyes to a lot of things. It primarily opened up my eyes to what, and this is going to sound weird, to what I didn't want.
Hmm. And when you got back, too, Madison had probably blown up by that time, a lot like San Francisco and the Bay Area, hadn't it?
It did. The Midwest has always been a little bit behind at times as far as catching up to the cultural scenes on the East Coast and West Coast, but it did eventually become Madison, Milwaukee. It did become psychedelicized, for lack of a better word.
Sure. Jim Leiben speaking with us live from Milwaukee, and we have Denny Geyer in the studio. They were all part of AB Sky, a legendary. I guess we call it a San Francisco band because it became AB Sky out here, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we changed our name. Actually, I think it was on the drive out. We had been the New Blues in Milwaukee. And, Jim, remember when our home base was kind of the Avant-Garde, a small club on the east side of Milwaukee.
Right. And it was a little coffee house.
Yeah.
And they featured a lot of the older black blues generation from Chicago and from elsewhere. They used to come up there and play all the time. That was really like my first-hand education to the real blues.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I remember that's where I first saw Charlie Musselwhite. That was like 1966 or 67, I mean. And I remember, I don't know if we went to the show together or not, Jim, but he was playing with Johnny Young, who's not that well-known blues artist, but I mean,
right.
I just love his voice.
Yeah.
And he was an excellent rhythm guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And he played mandolin on some blues, and I'd never heard anyone play mandolin on the blues, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Right.
But I got to say something about Jim. When I met him, when I got back from the service in January of 67, and we got together, and I remember we really hit it off, and we had this mutual love for, you know, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Sonny Boy, all these classic blues masters that most people had not discovered yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, Jim, I can't remember where you were living, but we'd go to like your bedroom or your apartment or a boarding house, wherever you were living, and you had a little phonograph, and I remember we would sit on your bed. I had my guitar, you had your harmonica, and we'd play all these 45s of the people that we loved, you know?
Yeah.
And we would play along with them, and then we would turn the record off and try to, like, emulate what these guys were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wanted to say that was, years later, in 1980, I did a show in Canada, a weekend with Ricky Nelson, and I got a chance to talk with him. And while we were talking, he said really the same thing. He said when he was starting out and James Burton, the great guitar player, was his guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
He said they would get together at his house and they would play all these 45s and they'd be picking up the arm trying to copy what other guys were doing, you know? And that's the same thing that Jim and I remember sitting there and us listening to these Howlin' Wolf and every, and we would choose songs we wanted to do and we'd kind of put together a little idea and then, you know, played for the band and away we went.
How's it feel to be sitting today, 50 years later, still doing it? Because, Jim, you're still active, right?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah.
As much as I can be, you know.
Yeah.
For a guy your age.
When I say that, I'm being facetious, you know, because you said it 50 years later.
Yeah.
You know, so 50 years has taken a toll. And, you know, I'm sure Denny can speak to this, too. You know, we both have to pace ourselves a little bit more now. You know?
It's more like pacemaker ourselves. No, I'll tell you, I was back, Bert, I was back for my 50th high school reunion in the summer of 2011, and Jim invited me to do a show with him, a gig in Milwaukee, and he's got this great quartet. I mean, they're just, they're really, and Jim is doing what he wanted to do. I know what he meant when he said, when he was out here, he realized what he did not want to do. Because he really loved, he really had a great respect for, and still does, the great blues traditionals and masters. But he's got this great quartet, and I did a gig with him the whole night. And somebody, Jim, I know you don't have a computer, but someone got in touch with me, and somebody, like with a video camera, you know, a phone or something, taped a lot of the show, and there's like six tunes on YouTube on the internet under your name and my name, and they sound great. I mean, you were doing Don't Start Me Talking, and what is that song, Recession Number 3 or
Recession Blues, whatever. Yeah,
I've yeah, and
over the years.
Yeah, like six songs, and they sound great. I mean, the sound is great, whoever did it on their phone, you know.
Times have changed, fellas. It's a brand new world, isn't it?
Yeah,
I hear there's a lot of stuff of me on YouTube, and like I say, Lord, like you said, I don't have a computer, so I don't even know what's up there.
Oh, there's, I'll tell you, I've Googled you, and there's a ton of stuff on you and videos and people that had, you know, filmed you in from the audience type of thing.
You're
all over the place.
Oh no! Oh,
yeah,
you better get to the library and check that out, Jim Lyman.
I'm sorry to tell you.
another thing you did, Jim, and this became infamous, is you went back to Milwaukee and started a band called Short Stuff.
Right.
And I don't know how many records you guys put out, but the one record that I have, and Denny brought it today. I don't know if it was a hit or made any money or anything, but this song, Talk Is Cheap, became an infamous, because of your harmonica solo in there, it became a solo that at some point, if you didn't learn how to play that solo, you were missing something. And I played harmonica for many years, and I know all about this.
Really?
Yeah. And talk a little bit about the Short Stuff band, because when you went back, you and that band, it wasn't a traditional blues band. You guys played that, but you got funky too. You guys got out, you know, all, you kind of spread your wings.
Yeah, over that band was together for 15 years, and over the 15-year period, we did do a lot of experimenting. But basically, it was always blues based.
Mm-hmm.
But we did stretch out. We, you know, at the time, a lot of the jazz players were starting to funkify their jazz. You know, like Eddie Harris and Grover Washington Jr. and you know, the list goes on and on. Ronnie Laws, and you know, it just goes on. Bill Withers, mm-hmm. who wasn't really a jazzer, but you know, all that stuff was going on. I mean, you know, it was a real revolution, much like the blues was, and
the funk had seeped into everything.
Every anything. Yeah, and it was you know, I just dug it. I was a drummer all through grade school and high school, and that stuff really moved me, and I wanted to play some of it, and we had a keyboard player in the band, Junior Brantley, who was, you know, right in the thick of it too. He had started out playing with Sonny Boy Williamson. Junior was 10 years older than I was, so, and Sonny Boy lived here in Milwaukee for a while in the early 60s.
Wow.
Yeah.
This I did not know. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Milwaukee, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, Milwaukee's only an hour and a half from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I found about a lot of that the blues players from Chicago would come up here to play. I was too young to really be part of that, but they would come up here and play all the time because it was only an hour and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, and sometimes they would just live here. Sonny Boy had a wife here.
Wow.
And little Walter would come up here and stay up here for months at a time.
Wow.
And in fact, I met little Walter here in Milwaukee.
Really?
And anyway, but where was I going with this? Anyway, Junior Brantley started out playing with Sonny Boy. Sonny Boy was playing in the inner city bars, you know, while he was living here. And Junior was a young musician, and he knew Sonny Boy had hits out. And he said he got the gig because he was the only one amongst his peers or his buddies that had a keyboard. And you know, so that's how he got the gig, you know.
That's amazing.
And then Junior went on to form a R&B band called Junior and the Classics, which had a number of regional hits, and it was really a funky, soulful band. In fact, the first time I ever saw the Rolling Stones was in 1964 at the arena downtown, and it was a 5,000-seat arena, and there were 2,000 people there for the Rolling Stones. Now, this is the first time they came through the States, and Junior and Brantley and the Classics were opening up for them.
Wow.
And I saw Junior, and it was screw the Rolling Stones, you know, because Junior just blew them away.
Wow, what a trip.
Excuse my.
That's okay.
I know you told me to wait. Jim,
can I interrupt for one second?
Please do, Dave.
Sure.
Yeah,
do.
When you talk, I remember in 1964, I hadn't met you yet, Jim, but I saw Junior and the Classics at a club in Milwaukee, and I had already been into the blues for a couple of years, and I love Sonny Boy, and I remember he went up there and he did "Don't Start Me Talking" and "Fattening Frogs for Snakes," and I'm going, you know, by then the world was consumed with the Beatles, and I'm going, this guy is great. And I loved his singing. He reminded me of Junior Parker. He had that smooth.
Oh, he loved Junior Parker, yeah.
Yeah, me too. And I saw Junior in the Classics. And then, you know, I met you 3 years later.
Right. Well, anyway, and I guess I'm straying from the point here, but Junior was real savvy musically and just kind of with the times. And he really was influenced by all the stuff that was happening around us at the time too. So, and he was so equipped to do that stuff. You know, I mean, he was just an amazing singer, and still is to this day. And
is he still in Milwaukee?
Great. He was from Carthage, Mississippi originally, but he moved up here quite young, and you know, was based out of Milwaukee for the longest time. He eventually, after Short Stuff broke up, he eventually went with the Thunderbirds.
I remember that.
Yeah.
You still stay in touch?
Anyway, as a result, during that whole 15-year period that Junior and I worked together, we did cover a lot of blues-based and funk-based and elemental jazz-based stuff. It was quite an experience. It really was. That's where I really, really got things together. And I as much as I love the blues, and as much as Shortstuff continued to play bluesy stuff and blues stuff, I did get influenced by a lot of the other great funk players that were happening at the time, and to this day I still relate strongly to that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this now while we got you on the phone. Let's play Talk Is Cheap. You listen too, Jim, and we'll come back and talk.
Okay.
And yes, that's what we've been talking about. That was Short Stuff, that Milwaukee band featuring Jim Lyban on harmonica. We got Jim on the phone right now. Jim, does that bring back memories?
Yes, it does. In fact, that it's interesting. That was the second recording of that song. Originally, that song was recorded in 1970, right after I got back from San Francisco when Short Stuff was just getting together. And that recording that we just heard, I decided to put it on that album because Johnny Winter had just recorded it.
Really?
Yeah, he recorded it on an album of his called Raising Cain, and I figured, well, if you know, if Johnny recorded it, I can, you know, get some more mileage out of it, you know.
Did you get any money from that?
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I was kidding. Johnny ain't got no money.
This is the music business, and this is the blues music business on top of it.
Yeah.
And I actually did. I actually did see some money from it, but because of Junior, I mean, because of Johnny Winter.
That's good, man. Jim, I want to thank you so much for your time today, and this is amazing. And look, you know, if there's any way possible, you got to come out and see your buddy Denny out here, and you guys got to do a gig or something.
Well, I certainly want to. I am doing a little more traveling these days, and it's definitely on my bucket list is to see Danny in his San Francisco element.
Very cool. Yeah, he weathered the storm pretty good, man. He looks great. Well, you saw him.
Well, I've seen him. I just saw him last summer. Well, you don't know how he used to look. He was
well, I saw a picture from an old article, man. It's you guys had that collegiate that real. Yeah, you guys look great, man. It was beautiful.
I had hair.
Yeah, didn't we all back then? But Lyman still get Jim. You still got your hair, huh?
I somehow
lucky dog.
Does
God
that rat man?
Anyway,
it's not
Jim,
the same color anymore. But.
Yeah, right. Jim, thanks so much for your time. We're gonna go out one more AB Sky tune and
okay,
and be good, stay in touch, and get out here as soon as you can. Okay.
Okay, Bert, I want to thank you very much for having me on your show, and Denny, I love you. You're my man. I mean, Denny was so instrumental in my development as a blues player. So anyway, I just want to say I love you, and it's great being on the show with you.
Oh, thank you, Jim. I love you too. We've told each other that over the years, and we had some great times together, and hopefully there'll be a lot more. I'll see you this summer. I'm going to be back this summer, so
great.
We'll do something then.
Great. All right. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
See ya. This is KZSU, Stanford.
Every day in the U.S., blood is needed to save the lives of accident victims, patients with cancer and other diseases, and those undergoing routine surgery. Most Americans do not realize the short shelf life of blood, approximately 42 days for red blood cells, which means that our blood supply constantly needs replenishment. To help ensure that this vital resource is available to those in need, the Stanford Blood Center invites all healthy, eligible individuals to give the gift of life by becoming blood donors. For more information, please call the Stanford Blood Center at 1-888-723-7831. That's 1-888-723-7831. Habitat for Humanity International brings families and communities in need together with volunteers and resources to build decent, affordable housing around the world. You can become involved with Habitat for Humanity on a variety of levels, including campus chapters, youth programs, local Habitat affiliates, and through their Global Village program. No experience is necessary. For more information, please visit www.habitat.org. That's www.habitat.org.